declared that Assange and his team has offered to answer that he should offer he had offered to answer questions by Swedish police in the UK. That's beyond dispute, and that offer has not been taken up. And as you mentioned, Swedish courts have been very critical of the prosecutor, of the Swedish prosecutor, for this. And if you read those judgments closely, they're in Swedish, of course, you'll see that it is as strong a criticism as you can expect possible from a Swedish court against the way the prosecutors have proceeded here.
And Masandras, we only have about 30 seconds or so, but your sense of how public opinion both in Britain and in Sweden is in respect to how their governments are dealing with the Julian Assange case?
Well, it's split. It's split. But no country likes to get a ruling for arbitrary detention to be censured by the UN like this. But if you don't abide by it, you fall into the category of countries we don't like to compare ourselves with, who do not abide by these rulings. And it's very important for the international human rights systems that countries like the UK and Sweden do actually go for show a good example and do follow these rulings, because in the end they are bound by the conventions. And there's no more authority body to interpret and apply the convention on arbitrary detention than this working group, which is established by the UN.
Masandras, we're going to have to leave it there, but I thank you so much for being with us. He is the former UN Special Rapporteur on Arbitrary Detention and chair of the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention now. Professor at University of Oslo, a visiting professor at All Souls College in Oxford, where we just spoke to him. A very special happy fifth birthday to Arthur Alcock. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
All right. It is 8 a.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Up next is Positively Revolting Talk Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film screening of This Changes Everything, Tuesday, February 9th, 6:30 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center Auditorium in Portland. This Changes Everything is a film directed by Avi Lewis and inspired by Naomi Klein's international bestseller of the same title that attempts to reimagine the vast challenge of climate change.
I've spent 6 years wandering through the wreckage caused by the carbon in the air and the economic system that put it there.
There will also be information and representatives from local groups involved in the climate change struggle. Again, that's Tuesday, February 9th, 6:30 p.m. at the Multnomah Arts Center Auditorium, 7688 Southwest Capitol Highway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
On February 20th, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m., Grassroot News will honor the memory, legacy, and life of Malcolm X. Join us for the music, the memory, and the deconstruction of Malcolm's political career, his split from the Nation of Islam, and the course of actions that led to his assassination 51 years ago on February 21st, 1965. As Ozzie Davis eulogized,
"A prince, our own black shining prince, who didn't hesitate to die because he loved us so."
Again, on February 20th, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m., join us as we honor the memory, life, and legacy of Malcolm X.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from McMiniman's Crystal Ballroom, presenting A Conversation with Russian Feminist Punk Rock Protest Group Pussy Riot, Tuesday, February 9th, moderated by Storm Large and John Sopovero. Tickets and information for this all-ages seated event with Pussy Riot are available at crystalballroompdx.com.
You're frustrated. No, my revenge is dead. time is 8:05, and you are listening to Positively Revolting here on KBOO, your community radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And here we are, Positively Revolting as ever. That was 7-Year Bitch. That was a song called Dead Men Don't Rape. It's
guess what our topic is.
It's a song I used to open my punk show with a lot back when I was a punk DJ. Well, yes. In fact, Lynn, our topic this morning is rape culture.
We wish we didn't have to have this show.
It seems like we talk about it a lot. And,
but we do.
And that's because it is prevalent. It is around us. And there are always more horrifying stories coming to our attention. And really, we know that our silence does not protect us. We know that silence is the voice of complicity. We know that the only way to end violence against women is to actually talk to each other about the fact that, yes, it is happening. Yeah, we get to name it. And we get to actually come up with strategies to turn this part of our culture around and to say it's not acceptable. This is not normal human relationship. This is not normal human behavior. Unlike what some folks actually are putting out there these days.
Yeah, what blew the tops of our heads off was the pro-rape pickup artist. Ooh, I can't put that in an art form, but that's just me. From his mommy's basement, so I hear.
Well, you know. Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, Rushdie. Okay. King Rush. There.
The return of King.
Yeah, this guy. And I'm going to go ahead and say loser, who wrote basically several manuals on how to gaslight, coerce, and rape women. Sorry, his pickup manuals. I forget their nomenclature. Is trying to start a tribe of neo-masculinity and put out there for a global meetup tomorrow where heterosexual men can gather around the globe and pump each other up because apparently
that is a horrible image.
Neo-masculinists don't get enough reinforcement in their lives, right? And they wanted a space safe and away from women, no women allowed, because girls distract.
Well, then they can rape each other?
No. Oh. That's what girls are for. They're not for these meetups, though.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I just
that's
don't
different.
Understand
you got to get your bro energy on first. Anyway, we'll maybe detail that a little more later, or maybe not.
Well, maybe not.
He actually did call it off because, gosh, some people actually said that they would go and meet
them. Yeah, who
was it
that were going to meet him?
There was many around. There was a women's boxing club.
That's the one
that
I loved.
Seemed
I loved
to be the final decider.
Darn,
there.
I'd love to.
Because he feared
video.
For the men's safety. I don't even know where to start with the idea that a whole bunch of bros, neo-masculinist, male superiority folk are intimidated by the idea of a women's boxing club showing up. I don't even know where to start with this. Anyway.
He's living in fear.
Speaking of living in fear, I want to talk about some of the hallmarks of rape culture just for a second. Rape culture tells women not to walk alone at night. Just like the opening song said, don't go out alone, you might get raped. But not by a dead man. But our culture teaches women, teaches girls, that really when you're walking alone at night, you got to be hyper vigilant. You got to be hyper careful. And if something happens to you, it was your fault because you shouldn't be going out alone. You shouldn't be actually using your agency as a person in this world who wants to get from point A to point B without having their being violated. And if in fact you are violated, it's your own fault because you shouldn't have been actually exercising your agency. You should be under the protection of your male kin at all time, apparently.
Apparently. Robert Jensen, do you want to get to that now?
No, I want to finish these.
Okay.
And then we'll get to that.
Okay, great.
Right. So rape culture asks if a woman fought back, and then rape culture judges her either way. If she didn't fight back, well, why didn't she? She obviously wanted it. If she did fight back and was injured, well, it was her own fault. She shouldn't have fought back. If she fought back and wasn't successful, then she didn't fight back hard enough. There is no winning. There is no out. There is no, wow, we support you, sister. You know, you had to do what you had to do, and you had this crime perpetrated upon you. That is not the attitude in rape culture. Rape culture tells us to teach women self-defense as a way to stop rape. It teaches that, you know, when you get rape culture and gun culture together, then all women need to be heavily armed, and that would stop rape, right? If only we all just, you know, carried guns. Maybe some AK-47 strapped to our backs while we go to the grocery store, pick up our kids from daycare, you know, stop. You know, that would do it. It does not, however, ever tell men that men need to talk to each other and actually recognize what rape is and avoid it. Don't do it, right? That is actually what stops rape. Rape culture enforces the patriarchy by underscoring traditional gender roles and invoking rape as punishment. If a woman steps out of line, you know that you could be facing rape as your ultimate teaching tool. This happens. It happened to me. Rape culture depends on the silence of women and the complicity of men for its continuance. Men have a unique role in ending rape by making it clear to their friends, to their colleagues, and to their kin that it is never acceptable to force, to coerce, or to drug a woman into sex. It's not a joke. It's not amusing. And we need to really be clear on that as we raise male children, as we talk to that half of our species, men. It is important to convey it's not okay, and it is, in fact, your responsibility to stop it. So speaking of men that actually get it, Robert Jensen,
who just had an article in Truth out, I think it came out yesterday, and of course, rape culture, and the problem of patriarchy.
Robert Jensen's a professor of journalism. He's been a guest on our show several times over the past several years, talking about masculinity and feminism from a male perspective. So go ahead, Lynn. I just wanted to back up and give people a little context.
Okay, yeah, I was going to do that. First, he says, do we live in a rape culture, or is rape perpetuated by a relatively small number of predatory men? We've kind of talked about that. And second, is rape a clearly definable crime, or are there gray areas in sexual encounters that defy easy categorization as either consensual or non-consensual? And that is, to me, that is just a huge issue. That is a huge issue. He says, if those seem tricky or trick questions, don't worry. There's an easy answer to both: patriarchy. Also, yesterday, Lisa Loving, a sister of Positively Revolting and now the PM News and Public Affairs Director here at KABU, did a little interview with Robert Jensen, and she was good enough to share that with us this morning. If Kristen wants to cue that up, it's about 4 minutes.
Let's remember that Bruce V is selling books. And so how much of his website and the pronouncements he makes about men, women, sex, gender, power, how much does he believe and how much of his provocative to sell books? It's hard to tell. But whatever the case, it's clear, as you point out, that there's a real deep misogyny at the heart of this, a fear of and hatred of women that is, you know, part of patriarchy, always has been, and I think makes its, reasserts itself at various times, I think as a result of men feeling threatened by the advances that women make. So in a sense, this is not just anti-feminist, it's anti-women, and even more deeply, it's anti-human. Bruce V is the expression of male fear that comes out in this kind of aggressive, dominating way.
Robert, as a male feminist, can you talk a little bit about the role, the positive role, that men can play within the feminist movement and within the lives of women and the planet?
Yeah, I think the first thing for men to recognize is that through most of our lives, at least through much of my life, feminism was presented to me as a threat. That is, whatever feminism or feminist had in mind, I was brought up to believe it wasn't probably going to be very good to me. And I think the main thing that men have to understand is feminism is not a threat to us. It's actually a gift. The toxic conceptions of masculinity that emerge in patriarchy, and they'll vary from time to time and place to place, but masculinity in a patriarchal society is always toxic. It not only is a grave threat to girls and women, which of course it is, and it's girls and women who suffer the most in patriarchy, but it also constrains men in ways that I think most men know if we're willing to be honest and self-reflect. And so feminism is not only a way to protect the interests and rights of girls, it's also a way for men to transcend the very toxic limits that this conception of masculinity places on us. There's a lot of talk these days about bystander behavior. When we're talking about sexual violence, there's, of course, the problem of men who rape, but there's also the problem of male culture that accepts rape. And the behavior of bystander men is as important as the behavior of sexually aggressive and violent men. I think that the core of feminism has always been about a challenge to hierarchy, primarily in gender, but across the board. And that means, you know, we have to step back and ask whether some of the practices that have become commonplace in contemporary culture. In my case, I work a lot on the feminist critique of pornography and the way that objectified female bodies are routinely bought and sold for pleasure in this country, and how that's become a normal part of contemporary America. We've lost a lot of ground on these matters, and I think the need for a revitalized feminism, and from my point of view, a revitalized radical feminism, has never been more clear. And you know, people can start that at small levels, with friends getting together, study groups, people trying to understand these issues. And I think there's a real need for that. I see certainly young women and some young men on the campus where I teach in Texas feeling that need and looking around for those connections. And I think it's a very fertile time for making those connections right now.
Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Lisa and Robert Jensen. That was a little clip. That was an interview that Lisa Loving did yesterday for the KBOO Evening News, and she was nice enough to share it with us. It is 8:18 in the morning. You are listening to Positively Revolting. I'm Lynn. I'm here with Ani, and we are talking about rape culture today. If you would like to join in the conversation, please do. The number to call is 503-231-8187. You can also contact us on Facebook at Positively Revolting, at Gmail, positivelyrevolting@gmail.com, or the Twitter sphere at Positive Revolt. It is it not?
It is.
Those are ways to get in touch with us. Give us a call. This is fertile conversation that we're having here, because we are, you know, rape is about power. We all know that. And the whole state of power in our culture right now is in a state of flux. There's so much fear, especially around the folks, I'll just say it, white males who have the power and, you know, who wants to let go of their power freely, only incredibly evolved people. So there's not a lot. We have a lot of work to do in that area. There was great, now that we're talking about a thing that went around the internet for a while that I loved, and it was 10 rape prevention tips. And I'm not going to do them all. I was reading them to Teresa Mitchell earlier, and the one that just cracked her up was, carry a rape whistle. If you find that you're about to rape someone, blow the whistle until someone comes to stop you.
You know, it's the thing I love about that piece, Lynn, that you have put on our Facebook page, have you not?
I haven't. I will do it right now.
Momentarily.
I put it once, long ago. I did. I'll do it again.
Yes. The thing that I love about that is it turns the world upside down. Actually, it turns rape culture on its head by placing the responsibility for stopping rape in the rapist's camp, right? How do we stop rape? You don't rape anyone. It's pretty much have some self-control about
you. When you encounter a woman asleep, the safest course of action, it says, is not to rape her.
You know, that is, in fact, how you prevent it. It's one of those things.
People go to the laundry room to do laundry.
For example.
For example.
503-231-8187, the number to call, just like John did. John, you're on the air.
Good morning, John.
Hi, good morning. This is a very serious and dark topic that you've taken on this morning.
It is. And what do you have to add?
Well, first, just let me talk about my own personal experience. I've been raped repeatedly. I was raped as a child. I was nearly murdered in that process. So I know the sheer horror of that. So I've been through that. This is the kind of thing that basically boys don't typically talk about. That, you know, that's a defining experience in one's life that will impact one.
Yeah, child sexual abuse does affect all genders. Absolutely, and it affects
our
lives forever.
Well, I don't advocate abuse of any individual at all, but in my investigation of this, while I understand why it's frequently framed as preventing violence against women, rape in our culture is kind of, in particular, I think, you know, within the prison system, it's the kind of thing that is a joke that comedians will tell all the time, is because if you're going to be sent to jail, the likelihood of rape is very high. And since the incarceration of males is greater than the incarceration of females, that there's a huge population of men who are being raped on a regular basis. I'm sure I identify with this because of my own personal experiences. The other thing in my investigation of this is that I understand the desire to prevent rape, but it seems to be that it's actually a small percentage you can describe them in any manner that you would want to describe them, you know, males that are raping females.
I don't know that I'm not sure that I agree that it's a small percentage, because when we have the rape culture, then it becomes normalized behavior. And there's a movie that was talked about last week on Democracy Now. It's called Audrey and Daisy. And that movie is a documentary that was screening at the Sundance Festival, and basically looks at the story of two teenage women, two high school girls, who were both raped by friends at social events. And this is, you know, basically legitimized in high school behavior in so many ways throughout our country. And this documentary looks at how male culture reinforces that in high school, looks at how this whole culture, including slut shaming, which we haven't actually gone into yet, is normalizing this. It's no longer a couple of creepy guys in an alley. This is, you know, considered, oh, it's what you do. You get the girl drunk and you can't say the word here on the radio, her, because that's what you do. That's sexuality. And it's not sexuality. That's what Lynn and I are here saying. It's not normal. It's not okay.
Right. But men are also, rape is, rape is about power.
Yes.
And I understand what you are saying, John, about men also being raped, the prison system, but also just in life. And I would say it was a small group of men if I didn't know so many stories and have my own stories and just on my own, you know, personal experience of how many people have either been had a rape attempted upon them or been raped. And that's people, sure, both genders.
Sure. And give me just like a minute to be able to. And the reason to have the discussion is so that we can all educate each other,
sure,
and, you know, appreciate where we're coming from through our personal lived experiences. So, I mean, I totally, I'm going to be candid but not obscene. So one of the things I totally understand is, like, having been raped as a child, is I felt both incredible pain, but I also felt some sexual pleasure. And there's a kind of incredible twistedness that says that if you experienced any kind of sexual pleasure, that then you, quote, wanted it.
Right.
That I understand on a personal level that you can feel something that you do not want to feel, and it may have elements of pleasure, and that probably only adds to the horror of the experience.
Yeah, so, I think that also is very important to bring up, and that has been used against rape victims throughout time.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially children.
And I think it's actually important for a male to speak about this, to be able to say, I understand, because I've gone through the same experience. So, I agree with that. Is like, you know, to say to somebody who's been raped, to say, well, did you experience any kind of pleasure during the midst of it? It's like, that doesn't even make any difference. The real
and
point
what a question
is,
it delegitimizes delegitimizes the person's experience.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we're agreeing with you, John.
We're agreeing with you, just in horror. We're agreeing with you in horror.
Yes.
Yeah.
And really, truly, that it is. It there's a genuine aspect of horror, and unless you've actually gone through it, you wouldn't know.
Right.
And so the normalization of it, it's horrible. The one thing that we live in such an absolute soup of. There's so many things going on all at once. So for me now then, as a male who's got that perspective, then to grow up and I'm heterosexual and had relationships, and I would have relationships in which I actually was trying my best to behave in a consensual manner, and in sexual encounters, things could become extraordinarily confused. And so something that I would be told after the fact that I had done something wrong when I was only trying to behave in a consensual manner. And that as a guy, that's a little bit of the flip side where you go, please just communicate with me clearly. You know, I have no, I would actually attribute this to that there's many people who have been abused as kids, and I myself understand the ambivalence and conflict surrounding one's own sexual desires.
And you know, I appreciate all this, but I think
I'm going to respond to that line, but we have the bases loaded, John.
I totally understand, but let me give you just like one specific thing. So I was with a partner whom I'd been monogamous with, and we had broken up, and we got back together, and we started to make love, and she like stopped it in the middle of it. I didn't resist at all. She stopped it in the middle of it, and then we were spooned cuddling, and then so she stopped it and said no, and I'm respecting that, and I'm pressed up against her, and she is pressing into me rhythmically.
So,
we can't do this. We have an FCC thing. No, John, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
But
no, you don't, John. I think I'm getting what her problem was.
Can I have 30 seconds to speak? I did not
You've
respond.
Had almost 5 minutes.
Let me finish. All I'm asking for is 30
you
seconds.
You can't describe sexual acts on the radio with us. We have FCC rulings. I'm sorry about that. Yes, you are.
I don't want to have this argument. I'm sorry. We're going to let you go, John. What we're going to do is actually say, consent, I get it. It's a tricky thing sometimes, except it's not. Here's the deal. Happy to hear you say that when she said no, you stopped. Cool. And I get that. Here's one of the ways that patriarchy and sexuality, patriarchy damages sexuality. Because we're taught about pleasure, right? We're taught that women actually aren't to seek it. That's one thing, right? And we're taught that if we say yes and we enjoy it, then we're floozies, we're sluts, we're shamed, we're whores, we're damaged goods. A lot of times women internalize these very mixed messages. If we don't seek sex and we don't if we're not looking to be receptive, then we're prudes and, you know, we're uptight and we're old fashioned. And, you know, there is no winning, right, in patriarchy for anyone.
Anytime, anywhere.
But what I want to say is that sometimes, you know, because of that whole, you know, if you're a good girl, you're going to say no, and you want to be, and that whole dynamic that you want a strong man to just show you what you want, that is rape culture, right? That is it. And I get that women get damaged in rape culture, and that sometimes we have not necessarily been as clear as we might be. But that's way different. Way different, right? So as soon as like, oh yeah, you know, I wasn't very clear when we started cuddling. I wasn't very clear. Now I am. I say no. That's it, right? That's the end of that sexual encounter if, in fact, you're not a rapist. That's, I mean, putting it out there, that's when she says no, anytime she says no, it's no. Conversely, anytime a man says no, it's no. Okay? All right, let's move on.
I would love to call for some. We have a lot of men callers, and we love our men callers, but we would love to have some women chime in on this. 503-231-8187 is the number. And who is our next caller, Annie? Because somehow...
We have Rebel. Good morning, Rebel. You're on
Rebel,
the air.
Rebel. Sorry.
Good morning,
Lady.
Rebel.
Hello.
Hi.
But I do have a lot of important information, and really what I want to do is, because I have to get to work here, is just blurt it all out in about a minute. And then
please do. Blurt away.
So patriarchy really does come from the same source that all of our issues come from, and that's the corrupt elite class. They perpetuate this idea on society through media, through just about everything that we experience in our life. I was in the military, and I actually floated a message to you the last time you had this topic about the military and its impact on rape culture. I don't know if you remember that message, but I wanted to really expand on that. And really, the military has red light districts all around it. All its bases all over the world are red light districts close. And the military basically funds these red light districts and makes them possible, which makes the trafficking possible and all that kind of stuff. So what happens is the military members get into the military as young guys. They are basically dangled these adult Disneylands is what they're referred to, actually. And, you know, you go out to hit a Liberty Port in Thailand or Philippines or, you know, one of the more prominent red light district areas. And it's just a big hoot and holler for everybody. Well, even if you are a good guy and you don't want to be part of any of that, you get kind of dragged into it because all your buddies are going to the bars and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, the military promotes this. It's a silent thing that's out there that not many people know about. And what happens is these service members participate in this. They get out. They become police officers. They do the same thing to prostitutes like that one guy that was convicted. It's all connected. So, you know, and that's basically it. I mean, it's promoted heavily by our government, and it's done in a lot of hidden ways, and it's done in a lot of overt ways like mainstream media. And that's basically my comments on it. Thank you very much for listening to what I had to say.
Thank you very much for your call. Got to say that Veterans Voice, which is on After Us, 1 week a month. I can never remember what week that we get to see Angie and Marvin following us, but they have talked about this in detail. And I thank you very much for calling and sharing that perspective. Very true. Rape culture is reinforced by the government. There you go.
The military in particular.
Go patriarchy.
Yes.
All right. So,
how are you going to keep people killing if you don't do that?
If you
I don't know.
You know, because again, as you pointed out, Lynn, and you are completely right, it is all about power. And there is some very interesting and sick ties between sexuality and the military and how they teach people to kill. All right. Let's go ahead and talk to Brian, 503-231-8187, the number to call this morning. We are calling out patriarchy, rape culture, misogyny, the death of a thousand cuts, really. There's microaggressions that play into all of these things. We haven't gotten to those at all yet. There's Gamergate and their tendencies for swatting these days. There's so much to talk about when it comes to misogyny rampant in our culture and the patriarchy's, what I like to look at as, what I like to think of as the patriarchy's death throes. Because that's why they're lashing out this hard, right, Lynn? Right?
As far as I know.
Death throes.
Looks like that. Well,
yeah.
Let's hope.
Yeah. I'm sure of it. Brian, you're on the air, yeah?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Another guy here, sorry. The first
people... Apologize not.
No, it's... no, don't. It's fine.
We love you.
I'll make it quick, and hopefully some women behind the phone line
yes.
are going to get in soon. I really wanted to say personally a thank you to the first two callers, and I know the first one was difficult, but I think he was very courageous. But I understand your reluctance to let things go the wrong way. I just wanted to say all kind of a bunch of bullying. You just see it everywhere. You see it from Donald Trump and, you know, in politics and then in business. And then I'm glad you brought up that Gamergate thing because that's just over the top. And it really does feel like we've gone backwards, that this kind of bullying is okay. And then, of course, you have the... like the female minions like Jane Coulter and Sarah Palin, who sort of, they kind of validate that point of view to the, all the, you know.
They legitimize it. Look, we're women and we think this is fine.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like, I believe the, it's kind of along the lines of that, the unelected administrator in Flint. I think he's a black gentleman that,
yeah.
that did all that stuff. So, you know,
you can always find members of oppressed communities to yeah. speak, you know, for those that oppress us.
Right. And I just wanted to go back to your first, like some of your first statements, you were talking about the kind of can't win argument thing
yeah.
where no matter what the raped person would say, they're wrong. And, and we see that like with like going back to Trump and people like that, that we know that their arguments are not valid. We know they're not honest, and we know there's no integrity, but for some reason they have to be taken seriously. Why is it that we have to take those kind of arguments seriously? Because they're not, they're just playing games with you. They can't be honest or have real integrity when people argue that way, but they do.
Yeah.
I don't, yeah, that's yeah. the thing, that's the frustrating part is you want to argue with them and you want to make them see the light, but then after a while you realize they don't care to see the light.
They're not in it for enlightenment. They are, yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, thank you for the show, and I'll listen more.
All right, thanks, you man. Take good care. 503-231-8187, the number to call to join us this morning. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And here we are, Positively Revolting.
Once again.
And you can also follow along in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. Please do like our page on Facebook. We post all manner of stuff all week long, facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. And you could also email us, though we don't look at that very often, positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. And you know what else I got to say, Lynn? I realized this yesterday as I was thinking. This is actually the 22nd anniversary of Positively Revolting. February 4th, 1994, when I was but a child.
You started when you were 12. That was nice.
Okay, maybe I was a little older than 12. Okay, maybe a lot older than 12. Well, you know, but there it was. 1994, February 4th. And... wow. Yeah, here we are, 22 years later. Thank you for being a part of it for, oh, these last 6 years or something like that.
Something like that. Well, you're welcome, and thanks for
heck
for starting it out.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
the lovely Melody Silverwolf.
Yeah.
The late, great.
The late, great Melody Silverwolf. Cheers. So let's go ahead and talk to Emily. Good morning, Emily. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Lynn. I'm wondering why you're not using the term male supremacy, because I think that that gives a clearer picture and it kind of has a ring to it that identifies a global situation. I have a friend whose brother went to Taiwan, and he ended up becoming indoctrinated into a male supremacist group and basically disowning his sister and female relatives. So I think male supremacy is an important term to use to describe this. And it also gives a clear...
I have a question. So they were like such supremacists that they did not want to have women in their life at all. So his sister and his mother he disowned? What did you say? Was that?
Yes. He,
really?
He basically said, yeah, he'd become... under the influence of this group, he was no longer, you know, condoning their lifestyles. They're fairly liberal, at least his sister was, and he didn't want to have anything to do with them. But he also expressed that, you know, women are for men. Women are for the use of men. That was this
right. Okay. Okay, I get it.
Mentality.
Yeah.
It was just a question.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Emily.
Go with your thought.
My thought is that...
That we should be using the term male supremacy?
Yeah, because it also gives a clear definition to feminism, which is anti-male supremacy. And I think feminism gets a bad rap because it's sometimes confused for female supremacy.
Yeah.
And
I hear you. I think for me, the word patriarchy does it. Because it means, you know, male power, power over. It's the archy part of that hierarchy, you know, part. But male supremacy, updating the term, sure. I would agree that to me they're pretty much equivalents. And that is the issue. It is global male supremacy. You're right. I just always called it global patriarchy. So I think it's a word thing.
Yeah, patriarchy Semantics. Is described like the organization of society where men inherit the property. I mean, that patriarchy versus matriarchy is like the organization of your families being centered around the male versus the female. And I think that male supremacy is a different thing that is, you know, product of the patriarchy, but not necessarily the same thing.
All right. Well, thanks very much for your call this morning.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Take care.
You know, another way I think that it's just come to me lately, on our Facebook page, I posted this picture of Amy Schumer that Annie Leibovitz took, where she's, I guess, in her underwear or whatever. But it's someone on another site said how that was women are the most beautiful thing on the earth. And that's because we are, that's another reason we are the object of rape and of I'm missing a word, but we are the earth. The earth is a feminine thing. We represent that, and in industrialized cultures, race to use every resource to conquer that, you know, that sort of 18th century or 19th century early industrial mindset of we are here to conquer the earth. We are also here. Women just sort of get wrapped up in that because we do represent the earth, I think.
Well, it gets into that ecofeminism, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
All right. Let's 503-231-8187. This morning, please do join us as we call out parts of rape culture, as we name it, as we talk about our truths in an effort to end male supremacy, patriarchy, violence against women. Violence against us all. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 o'clock, Kristen Yant hosts Water World. It's an update on understanding the Superfund site at the Willamette Harbor with guests from the Portland Harbor Citizen Advisory Group and the EPA. At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints, Stephen Zunis discusses his article, The Five Lamest Excuses for Hillary Clinton's Vote to Invade Iraq. Russell Mokabear on corporate crime, and Food and Water Watch on the poisoned water in Flint, Michigan. At 11 o'clock on the Radio Zine, environmental scholar Johan Rockström gives us a Swedish perspective on climate change. And at 11:30, science writer Kara Platoni talks about the latest developments in the science of sensory perception. We thank you ever so much for listening to KBOO. And we thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. You make it all possible. You keep the lights on. You keep the signal flowing to your ears. Please, if you have not done your part to actually keep the lights on and the signal flowing to your ears, do that now. You can go to our website, kboo.fm, and you can click on Donate Today. You can also download our spiffy new app.
KBOO
has
so cool.
A spiffy new app. I was teaching Lynn how to use it. Yes, I was teaching Teresa how to use it yesterday. Lynn knew how to use it. Lynn.
It's very easy.
Good with the smartphone.
Well, it's really easy.
It is. It's super easy, and you can download it anywhere. It's a free app, and you can see all manner of things about your community radio station you've never seen before. There you go.
You can get all kinds of audio, things videos, that are going on, videos.
Amazing stuff. Really.
Yeah.
So, where do we want to go from here, Lynn? There's so many places to go from here.
I'm going to call for more callers, 503-231-8187. We've got a few minutes left. We'd love to hear from some women, but we are fine hearing from men as well. We're not
So I want to talk about how slut shaming plays into
oh,
this.
Oh, do. That's good.
So one of the things that really struck me, one of the things that got us thinking about this topic this week, because again, it is pervasive in our lives. There's really never not a good week to talk about it. But at some point, we do feel the need to incorporate other issues. Still, this week, our attentions were turned to it in part because of the Democracy Now! Story from last week about Audrey and Daisy, the documentary. There's the young woman that actually succeeded in killing herself had the experience of going to a friend's house, you know, sneaking around as a 15-year-old is apt to do. We've all been 15, right? Have you, dear listener, ever gone to a friend's house and not bothered telling your own parents that their parents were going to be away for the weekend? Have you?
I'm sure.
Have you
not.
Done that?
No.
Because I did. You know, and then they invited some other friends over and they were going to have a party because that's what 15-year-olds do. 16-year-olds, 15-year-olds, you know, this happens. And, well, some of the people brought alcohol to the party and there was underage drinking. And the girl, actually, Audrey, drank enough that she passed out and then was sexually assaulted by several of the boys at the party, who then took pictures of her passed out with obscenities written on her body in permanent marker, and then those were posted to social media sites. She felt humiliated. Well, of course, she felt betrayed because these were friends that she had known for many years, boys that she had trusted. But one of the things that she pleaded with them, and her mother finds these messages after her death, was she says, "Now I have a reputation I can never get rid of."
Oh. Her, at 15.
Her reputation is injured because she was raped and boys posted pictures of her passed out with obscenities written on her naked body. And I wanted to just sort of look at that for a moment because it's 2016. And for a woman,
rather Victorian,
to think that her life is over and she should just end it now because somebody, many people, and of course, social media, and you're a teenager, everyone in the whole world knows, right?
And once that's out there.
And she, you know, was upset because it wasn't just her own high school. She thought rival high schools would know, and she would, you know, it was like having the scarlet letter, right? Everyone would know she was that kind of
girl. The international scarlet letter.
Right.
It went worldwide. And what, talk about not even just high schools.
And so I want to look at that connection between slut shaming, between that double standard where girls are supposed to want sex and not want sex all at the same time. That I want to look at how slut shaming reinforces rape culture. I want to look at how slut shaming reinforces and reinvigorates the trauma of sexual assault when and if it occurs. And that whole what were you wearing is all a part of slut shaming.
What were you doing there?
And I just want to really underscore that because that needs to end. And that's something that we all have a part in. That's not just the rapist ending that, because I hear this out of women's mouths all the time. I hear this from survivors of sexual assault as we're hearing each other's stories. And there's a tendency for so many to look for a way to blame the person who's been assaulted, and it's not okay. And we really, really need to, bring new attitudes around sexuality forward.
Sounds like a fine idea.
That's what I'd say. Okay.
So should we ask, see what Sarah has to say?
I'll jump off the soapbox now.
That's right.
And back to the callers.
Fine soapbox. Sarah, good morning. You're on the radio.
Good morning. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I was just thinking about, you know, how our society is so over-sexualized
And we really need to teach both young men as well as young women to respect themselves and also to respect one another. And, you know, one thing I think is really important, too, with young women is how do we empower young women not to seek attention from men and not to seek acceptance in a patriarchy system? And I think that that's something that I've struggled with myself, is wanting to seek some acceptance and approval.
Well, example is one way to teach them, isn't it?
Right, exactly, exactly.
And it seems the biggest way.
We look at the media, right?
And
we
look at all these images
that are just, you know, put out there, and this unrealistic, you know, ideal body image for young girls. And even, you know, you look at even young girls' clothing and how it's made to be provocative. And even with my five-year-old, I have conversations, you know, with my five-year-old about, you know, about sex. And for me, it just always comes back to respecting ourselves, you know, respecting our bodies, respecting other people's bodies as well. And it goes, you know, it ties in with the slut shaming too, you know, with the way that girls dress and, oh, if you weren't dressed that way, you know, you wanted it somehow, you were, you know, bringing it upon yourself. I happen to believe that a little modesty can go a long way.
But it won't prevent any, modesty does not prevent rape.
Grandmothers are raped. Children are raped.
It doesn't matter what you're wearing. And I know.
No, absolutely. But there's this ideal. And so how do we teach young women to not seek attention from men, to not seek acceptance from men, and then also teach young men as well what it means to respect women, as we're teaching young women what it means to respect themselves.
I'll say once again, example.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. It is about teaching our children to be confident and approving of self-affirming, and not looking for approval from others. And in this male supremacist, patriarchalist world in which we live, yes, we are absolutely always right, seeking male approval. It's the daddy approval, right? And that is, you're totally right. The one part where I will quibble is we can wear whatever the heck we want. And you know, if it's all manner of, quote, provocative or not, that has nothing to do with my level of self-respect, nor how I should be treated. It is a fashion choice. And
right.
I think that, you know, sometimes people like to be playful in their fashion. I think sometimes people like to dress provocatively. I still don't think they're asking for it.
Well, it is a fashion choice, but then what about with the children? You know?
Well, I mean, if you're a parent, I wouldn't dress your little girl up as a sex object, you know?
It's a disease in the society, just this over-sexualized culture. And the images, it's dehumanizing, and it devalues what sex really is, and mm-hmm. the depth of a relationship and trust and love. And it's sickening. It's absolutely sickening. And I think that rape and everything else, and then the patriarchy as well. I mean, it's all symptoms. We have this crazy societal disease. And I guess that's what I have to say, so thank you.
Thank you so very much for saying it. Take good care. And, you know, with that, we are so close to being out of time. We have time for one more call. We can squeeze in right about here.
Short and sweet.
And good morning, Nicholas. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I completely agree with caller, not the last one, but one before the last caller, who said that both young men and young women have to be taught in self-respect. And I think that offenses against women it's terrible. However, the way you present your show feels offensive to me, and I am sure to many other men, you know, from Bernie Sanders, very liberal guy, to somebody like, say, Governor Kasich, conservative.
I'm losing man, your point.
And my point is that I, for example, brought up my daughter as a single parent, and I taught her everything, many things you or your followers were talking about. And my daughter is very successful and proud of her achievement and what she is, young woman. And it makes me very proud of being her dad, parent and dad, and the way I taught her. Now, I believe that the way you present, you know, you bring separation. You know, you're not talking about women, say, like Hillary Clinton, who backs up her husband, who basically, you know...
We haven't actually talked about any political candidates at all, and I don't care about political candidates this morning.
And I feel very offended, and many men, I would say, that you bring separation between men, male, female, rather than talking about males and females together who are agree with you, and those who are males and females who disagree with you.
Okay. Because, okay, well, that because, at this point, I got to say we're out of time.
We are out of time, and I understand that that is your opinion, but it's not something that we feel that we've been doing. And sorry, Nicholas, we have to go. We are totally out of time.
Yeah, right, I understand. Why don't you talk about females?
Because, thank you for understanding that it's time for you to go. Goodbye.
And, you know, got to say, not really... trying to separate genders. Not really.
Everyone's got to say their opinion.
It is important for rapists to take responsibility for raping and not to rape. That's what I'm going to get back to saying. And with that, we are out of time. We do appreciate your listening. This is Positively Revolting on this, our 22nd anniversary.
Woo-hoo.
Who's
Tune
to
in
figure?
Again next week.
We'll be back.
Made. Music literally written in wax.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Film Festival, running through February 8th. Friday, February 5th, will show American Epic. The film pieces together the extraordinary 1920s story of record companies leaving the big city to tour America's backroads and capture for the first time the raw musical expressions of rural cultures. These field recordings, initially aimed for the rural markets from which they came, democratized music and gave voice to the most marginalized demographics in the nation. That's February 5th at 7 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center in the Witzel Auditorium at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the first annual Portland Bob Marley Birthday Party, Saturday, February 6th, starting at 6:30 p.m. at the Melody Ballroom in Portland. the life of Bob Marley will be celebrated with live reggae by Simba Puma and the Roaring Lions, by DJs Reggae Bob and Pablo One from Kingston, Jamaica, and live streaming from Kingston's own Bob Marley Festival. Again, that's the first annual Portland Bob Marley birthday party, Saturday, February 6th, starting at 6:30 p.m. at the Melody Ballroom at 615 Southeast Alder Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.